So, this all seems horrible.
It was bad. It had nothing, no fire, no energy, no nothing.
God help me.
Hello, and welcome to Upon Second Viewing, the podcast where we give another look to our favorite filmmakers' worst-reviewed films and find out what went wrong, or if it was really as bad as they say. I'm JT Sodergren of Quarantine Film Club.
It's the fourth time you've gone to the bathroom today. Why is your instinct to escape?
It is my instinct to come into the bathroom when I need to go to the bathroom.
How come I don't smell anything?
It's because I shoved an Altoid up my ass before I came in here. Don't press enter. I'm not sure I want to make that move.
Stop it. This is BS. This is a bunch of effing S. You're acting like a bee.
You're so mean since your body got weird.
Isn't the music industry kind of a tough game these days?
I have responsibilities. I can't afford to sit in my apartment getting baked, watching porn, and going to Tommy's Chili Burgers at 3 a.m. That's not even the order that happens in.
That was a clip from the trailer for Judd Apatow's 2012 comedy This Is 40, a quasi-sequel slash spin-off to his highly acclaimed 2007 smash hit Knocked Up. Released only 5 years after its predecessor, the movie was met with a variety of responses ranging from indifference to borderline anger, as critics seemed to be tiring of not just the running time of Apatow's films, but of the off-the-cuff improv style of comedic material. The movie still turned a profit, more than doubling its reported budget at the box office, and stars Leslie Mann and Paul Rudd garnered some kudos for their charming performances. While nowhere close to universally hated, the film still manages to land at the bottom of Apatow's filmography in terms of critical consensus, and people begin to seem ready to move on from these characters and possibly Apatow altogether. But is it really so bad? I invite my great friend Kume, Bay Area rapper, producer, family man, to discuss the challenges of balancing art life with dad life, as well as how relatable it is to bring an iPad to the John with you. Also joining us is Carson Higgins of Filmstruck Film Club, as we revisit This Is 40 and see how well it's aging. Just a note about the audio before we get started. There was some minor technical issues at the beginning of this interview. We're working out the kinks still. This is just episode number 2. We'll eventually get there, but bear with us for now, and it will sound better eventually. Thank you for listening, and here's the interview.
Sitting in with Dr. Dre or something.
Exactly.
What's good, y'all? Well, I guess I'm Snoop Dogg now. Yeah, what's up?
Word. Well, thanks, Nick, for doing this. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no biggie, you know, just on my lunch break from teaching kindergarten, you know what I mean? Yeah,
oh, for real?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that. Are you doing that on Zoom or in person?
Yeah, I'm not really a teacher. I just help my five-year-old. I'm more of like a assistant, I guess
Nick, you'd say. I'm gullible as fuck. And
oh, perfect. So this is going to go great then.
I'm going to get walked all over.
Nick's the TA, so he's handling Ivy schoolwork right there.
I'm the TA, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm also drinking a beer, so I'm not that great of a TA, but
well, who knows? You might be the best TA. You've got it figured out.
I got my sweet little nectarine as well.
A shout out Hen House, dude. Shout out the folks.
Oh, yeah. What's up? Is that you?
The get sponsored Hen House. Woo! Shout out Sayer and McLean.
Yeah, we're gonna get
those guys on at some point down the road. Talk about something.
Shouts to Bob, 5 o'clock somewhere, baby.
Yeah, well, baby.
Today with Kume from Rec League. Rapper extraordinaire, producer extraordinaire.
Thank you, go on.
Dad extraordinaire.
Yes.
Husband extraordinaire.
Hey, team family, baby.
And and one of the funniest guys I know. So when I asked him to be part of our pod here, to be our first guest on the pod, I was hoping he would pick something in the comedy genre, and he didn't disappoint, went with Judd Apatow, and it just so happens that This Is 40 is his worst reviewed film. And
it's It's funny because what I gave you like two options. You gave me a list of movies and I was like, oh, let's do this one. But the other one I picked was like really dark and depressing. And you're like, yeah, let's go with the This Is 40. I was like, all right, cool.
Guess what was it? What was the other one going to be?
I forget. It was like a horror movie or something. I don't know. But it's like, no, nah, let's not do that.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. I was just curious.
So it was just happenstance that This Is 40 happened to be the worst reviewed one because Nick is a father, married, approaching 40. Let's call him mid-30s still. Hang on to mid-30s.
It's my birthday in like 14, 15 days. I'll be closer to 40.
Hey, yeah, happy early birthday, man.
Thank you, bro.
Christmas baby. And you know, in this movie, Paul Rudd's character is in the music business, has a record label, and trying to balance that with being a husband and a dad. And I was just like, well, this is kind of perfect for having Cumon to talk about.
It was a little too real in some spots.
that's funny you should say that, because one of the major criticisms of this movie, I'll just read it from Mick LaSalle at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, yes, LaSalle, my favorite.
Yeah, he said, the real problem with This Is 40 is its lack of truth, that Apatow wanted to express something about married life and it eluded him. After all, no less than Kierkegaard once said that the actual dynamics of marriage are beyond the scope of art. So he doesn't think there was any realism at all in this movie. He tore the movie apart.
He went and quoted Kierkegaard.
Who's one of, you know, 19th century's well-known film critics.
He's like the original Dr. What is it? What's from Loveline?
Oh, you're Dr. Drew?
He's like Dr. Drew from the early 1900s.
I don't know. I guess my question is for both. And Carson, you have a live-in long-term relationship as well. So how, and an artist, an actor.
Yes, yes.
So how does this relate to both of you being in those positions?
Well, first of all, not married, don't have kids. You know, still in the young, the beginnings of 30s. So I still feel like I don't quite fully relate that hard to this one.
That's fair.
But I will say there are things that do feel familiar. I mean, you know, like we can definitely be in the bathroom at the same time, and you know, that's not it. Like if I'm taking a shit and she comes in, that's just what happens.
Sounds awful. But no,
it sounds like married life, man.
I think they really hit it on the nose with the being on the tablet / phone in the bathroom. Cause I've definitely been like, what, how long you been in there for? I'm like, I'm almost done. Hold on.
Not long enough.
No, just finishing up writing whatever I'm writing. But yeah, they really hit that on the nose. I think that might have been one of the first movies I seen do that. I don't know if it was just the era that it came out, like right when everyone was always on their phones or whatever, but I was like, oh yeah, definitely 40-minute bathroom breaks.
Yeah, just a break from everything.
Or some silence.
It's a very modern movie. I mean, it's very much of its time, like that. I mean, there's a lot of seemingly things of that nature that are in kind of all of Judd Apatow's movies. They all seem like they are just perfect time capsules for the year that they came out.
Right. Like
whatever version of the iPhone was out in 2009 or whenever. When did this movie come out?
2012.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 2012. Yeah, 2012. You know, it's like, We felt so futuristic in 2012. We thought the world was going to end.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm probably going to cut this out, but I will say the best version of Megan Fox is in this movie as well. Side note. But yeah.
Yeah, she's killing it.
She is killing
it. I actually was like, yo, I forgot who she was. And I was like, what's that actress's name? She was like everywhere when this movie came out. And then I was like, dude, I haven't seen her in anything lately.
Yeah, she had Transformers and then had like three kids or something and was like, peace out. Maybe over, started yeah. a beauty line or something. But yeah, Megan Fox was like the biggest.
She was huge star on in the that, planet. That era. Yeah.
And then it was just like, all right,
I'm out.
I'm going to go have yeah. a family.
Right, right.
Made with plenty of money.
The dude from Beverly Hills 90210.
With Jamie Foxx.
Is that who she's with?
She's with David Austin Green, and then she's with Machine Gun Kelly now or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, okay.
I'm not up on my tabloid romances.
You That's know a lot about her, right on.
Well, I mean, it's Megan Fox. So what about balancing home life with art life, you know?
Oh, I mean, for us, it's been, you know, it's been odd for this whole pandemic period of time, just because neither of us have been doing professionally a whole lot of the stuff that we used to be doing, where it was like, you know, when we were living in New York and we were doing stuff all the time, it would be like, she would have a gig real late night singing somewhere, or I would have like rehearsal for a show. And so we actually made it work like really, really well for each other. We love spending time together, and we also love getting to watch each other do what we do. Like, she's a killer singer songwriter, and I love getting to watch her do her thing, especially in front of other people, and be one of the people that's experiencing
sure.
her do her thing. And she, you know, similarly, I speaking for her a little bit, but she said it before, she likes watching me do what I do. So I mean, like, in you know, we've kind of managed to make it work. We met doing a show together, so it's always been a part of our life. It's never really been something that we have to juggle too much. And the thing I think we do really well is we support each other and encourage each other and create opportunities for like to challenge ourselves. Like, she'll help me with, I don't know, learning my lines or whatever. And we played a game the other day where it was like, we have to write a song in 30 minutes. And we had to do it together, and it didn't matter if we liked the song, it just had to be done in 30 minutes. It was like, we have to have two verses, chorus, and a bridge, and it doesn't even matter what you say, it just has to be the whole song done in 30 minutes. And so, like,
nice.
Playing a game like that, that's also a creative outlet. We support each other in a, I think, a really healthy, fun way.
Well, your wife, Jess, is also an artist, but not in the music arena necessarily.
Photographer. She does photography, and she draws and does a lot of like art media stuff. Yeah
So do you guys,
and she actually rips on piano. She plays piano way better than
that's so, right.
You know, when she comes over, she plays that one song, the and then she like steps off the piano and she's like, all right, what are we doing next? I'm like, all right, player.
So you guys are also able to, you know, balance the parenting life, married life, with, you know, some artistic creative
I mean, like, since, you know, everyone's at home,
your daughter, I assume too.
So everyone's at home, so now it's just kind of like, I just did an instrumental album called 4 Tracks and S20s, where I had my 5-year-old daughter kind of just yell on it like ODB. I just let her say whatever she wanted to say. And it's about 16-minute instrumental album with just her yelling. I threw some crazy effects on it, so it sounds like it's pretty cool sounding.
It's pretty awesome. It's a great little EP. And she's like the hype man of the year.
I have to hear that.
Yeah, you got to check that out. We pressed it up on cassettes. I'll see if I can find one laying around. But yeah, so like whenever I'm doing any music now, man, it's like real old man status. I get up at like 7 a.m. and just like start recording, because I got like an hour of free time before I have to like, you know, do dad stuff. So I'll record at like, I'll record some like 3 verses from like 7 to 8. And then while I'm like helping Ivy in kindergarten, I'll be like mixing them and like EQing them, adding effects. And then I'll like email them to whoever the verses are on, like on a recess, And then like, I'll come back. And then like, if I have time to make a beat, I haven't been making a lot of beats because that actually, I do need to like be chilling and like not have Ivy come and like, you know, tickle my ear or something, or like Louie, my dog, come over here and like put his face in my face when I'm trying to like hit the buttons or whatever. So I've been kind of chilling on the beats, but that's if I do make any music, it's like mad early in the day. So
Is that a time that you found is like a more creative time for you? Or is it just because that is the only time you have, it just has to be a time for you to be creative?
it's kind of both. Like it kind of started when Ivy was first born. Mm-hmm. So I was like not sleeping a lot, obviously standard. And yeah. So I'd be up like 4 or 5 in the morning, kind of walking around downstairs, like trying to get her to go back to sleep. But I would just like walk around like a crazy person, like talking to myself because I'm off like 2 hours of sleep for like 6 months straight. So I'm like, da, 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 and I'm like just mumbling like little lyrics or whatever. So then I just started to get real like productive early in the morning. And then so that kind of started it off for me. But it was definitely never like that until I became a dad. Like I would never record that early in the morning.
No, I remember you. We had second night. Second night was
second night. Yeah. Thing.
Is second night still a thing, or is it first night is over and it's time for bed because tomorrow?
I don't know. It's not as much as it was. Second night was almost like a full bottle of wine.
Yeah. Like, explain to the people what second night was.
All right. So you'd be having like, you know, a real good day with the fam or your girl or whoever your date is, or, you know, whatever you got going on in your life. And then say like 9:30, maybe whoever you were with might like want to go to bed or leave or whatever the situation would be. And then that's when you would start second night. That'd be like, all right, second night, I'm laying in bed, I'm eating ice cream and drinking this bottle of Pinot Noir and watching a movie or something. And then next thing you know, it's like 3:30 in the morning and you're, you know, 2 bottles of wine deep and about 40 pounds heavier.
Oh, yeah, a pint of ice cream and oh man, it's
got bagel bite dust on the bed.
Oh yeah, disaster. I remember. I mean, even when I was you know, single living up there, I would join in, and second night you would be hitting me up saying, "All right, second night is on." Like, what are we watching?
Sexy. Like, oh, yeah. All right, I just popped a bottle of wine. Second night's begun. What's the movie? That's the prequel to the Quarantine Film Club, Second Night.
Yeah, Second Night Film Club. It's just Black Night every night. So, oh, good. So Carson's Wi-Fi went out, but he is coming back now.
Okay, cool.
Perfect timing, Carson. Welcome back.
Thanks, guys.
Well, we just had a nice little talk about Second Night, which we'll catch you up some other time.
That's
but this is a perfect time to go into the second question I wanted to talk to you guys about. Some other criticisms from critics. Kyle Smith, the New York Post, said, "I don't think Apatow did enough research on the topic because no one could be as whiny, spoiled, tasteless, combative, and reliant on annoying stand-up comedy riffs as the entire cast of this film and most disappointing one of the year." And the critic at Slant said it certainly suffers from the staleness of its off-the-cuff improv-inspired mode of comedy, which prizes free-form riffing over organically constructed comedic scenarios. So basically, people are criticizing it for its kind of ad-libby, you know, random style of humor, which I think is personally hilarious. Like, yeah. The ad-libby just randomness of, like, Anchorman or a lot of you know, movies of the early 2000s that were just classics. They're basically complaining that style is played out. And so that's why this movie doesn't work. And I guess if you're tired of that, it's one thing, but I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this still a brand of humor that works for you?
I mean, I don't see why they hated this movie so much. Like, they're like really upset about this movie. Like,
I know. It's like they were like offended by it.
Yeah, they're like really pissed. Like, they talk bad about their family or something. Like, bro, it's just a comedy. Come on now. I don't know what they're talking about. I mean, I think it's funny. It definitely, like, that era of that style of comedy was pretty heavy in that era. So maybe if they just were just really sick of stuff that's funny, I don't know.
They're just sick of being entertained. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about movies where there's like a setup and a whole scene committed to like one idea or one like comedic premise.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I like rapid fire jokes, and there's something about Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann. They're just charming,
yeah, fun
people. You're like, I want to hang out with these guys, and they're occasionally really funny. What about you, Carson?
Something that this movie does that kind of reinforces this thing for me with a lot of Judd Apatow's movies is this one suffers from it. It's like it's too long. Like it's like all of his movies that come out are the director's cut, and it's like, because this one's like 2 hours and 15 minutes, and like
that is true. It is long.
Funny People is really long.
Funny People's like 2.5 hours. It might even be a little longer.
You know what I mean? And like
that's too long for a
Knocked Up is pretty long, but like Knocked Up is, I guess, consistently moving a little bit more. Like the momentum is kind of moving forward a little bit more. A lot of these This Is 40 is maybe Funny People's the bigger culprit of this, but like Funny People and This Is 40 just kind of meander through things. And so it's like the trailer will set up what seems like this movie that's going to be really great. And it's like, yeah, if we cut out half an hour, it probably would have been.
Yeah, that is true. That movie is hella long. I watched it on regular TV and it was like 3 hours long.
Yeah, with all the commercials. Yeah.
Like I rewatched the trailer because I didn't like rewatch the whole movie. I saw it, you know, probably when it came out.
Right.
But I was laughing my ass off at the trailer and then remembering things like other parts of the scenes. Like I was like, oh yeah, I remember this movie. But I was like, fuck, Melissa McCarthy is so funny in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When she's like, you touch my nipples. And he's like, I touched you right below the shoulder. Like, yeah. I have really high set nipples.
The crazy kid mom.
Yeah. Do you know, have you met some moms like that?
You know, no, crazy. I mean, I haven't even been to real kindergarten, bro.
Because you haven't dropped the kid off yet.
No,
because...
I haven't. No, I mean... So no.
Yeah. I forget that this like just not a thing right now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, even when we go to the park or whatever, it's not like we're like being chummy. We got masks on, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like no one's trying to get near each other.
Yeah.
Everyone's got like allergies, like coughing in the corner or something. They don't even want to be seen sneezing in public. So it's like, oh, weird.
Yeah. Damn. What a trip.
Another quick little thing that I notice about this and some other Judd Apatow movies, but this one in particular, is like it really feels like a way too long pilot for a sitcom I would have liked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see that.
We were just talking about The Life Aquatic early on another episode, and how there's just a bunch of ideas, and Apatow can't really decide if any of them are worth throwing away. He just like has never had an idea he didn't love.
Okay.
So he's like, let's not necessarily move the plot forward or even have a real plot to begin with. It's just kind of like, let's just throw a bunch of funny scenes with these people that you really like together. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily think that's a crime if it's as long as it's
definitely
funny.
Not.
If it was 2.5 hours long and only half of it was funny, then there would be a problem. But I pretty much laugh at everything that's in the movie.
Mm-hmm. That could be maybe why the movies are so long, because he just ain't throwing out no ideas, though. You know,
it's like when a rapper puts out an album with 24 tracks, and you're like, my guy, like there's probably 11 really good songs on this, and it could be a classic album.
Right.
And you could put out like a mixtape with the other 13 or something, and everyone would love both.
Or just not put those songs out that aren't there.
There you go.
Or throw like two of them on as a bonus track or something. Yeah. But
keep
like,
those ones for the vault. You know what I'm saying?
We don't need an hour and 20 minute.
Give your kids something to release.
Busta Rhymes album. I mean, I love it, but.
Yeah, it's a good album. I feel you though.
But that if, ELE you can, too? What's up?
Yeah, it's pretty good, but probably yeah, there's probably six songs on there where you're like, all right, Busta, you know.
I just like on that when you watch it on Spotify, it says the future classic album.
Oh, that's
yeah, already calling it, and yeah. It's just him lifting weights. He's like lifting weights the whole time, and they're like on fire.
Yeah,
it's and it's cartoon. Just like the future. So I found myself staring at that for like an hour and a half listening to the album. And I'm like, I'm like hypnotized by this weird ass fucking cartoon that they got on here.
I was this exact same thing opening night or the night it dropped. I was like listening to it and just I didn't like.
Yo, have I been staring at this for 45 minutes?
And then when you try and share it like on Instagram or something,
it
like,
does hey, it too.
The song, it's like, yeah, you're like, it's this all is intense.
Lifting weights, fucking raw, 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 raw.
With everything you know exploding.
Yeah, the future classic album. I'm all damn, I'm gonna start saying that with my stuff. Yeah.
Do it.
All right, well, let's get to the last thing, and then we can talk about some stuff you guys got work that you're working on. Right. Amy Nicholson at Box Office Magazine said, Apatow has drifted further and further from comedy with every film, but This Is 40 is the first where he hasn't even bothered to write any jokes. Instead of snappy dialogue, we get lazy exchanges. So, yeah, this Man. Is... Basically, they're saying that he's just phoning it in and just trying to put funny people in front of the camera and try to figure something out. But yeah. I don't know. I don't think this movie is as bad as everyone says it is. That's my own personal. But where do you guys put this in his ranking? Carson, where do you slot in This Is 40 in the Apatow?
Well, I mean... Real quick, I did just want to touch on, like, I think part of the problem was they advertised this movie as like the sort of sequel to Knocked Up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we're like, oh, yeah, I loved this couple in that movie. Like, they were great. And it's like, oh, and his daughters are going to be the daughters again. And like, we're doing it. Great. And everybody loved Knocked Up so much. And so it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is going to be really fun. And so then how do you make a 2-hour and 15-minute movie that's called the sort of Knocked Up sequel? And you never once have Katherine Heigl or Seth Rogen show up in the motherfucker. Yeah. Like, how does that happen?
Right.
I get that maybe they were busy, but like somehow, some way you gotta, maybe it was just me, but it's like, you gotta let me know that no, they're definitely not in it. It just happens to be the same characters. Cause it's my family and Paul Rudd. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have showed up at the pool party at the end or whatever. Whatever.
Totally. Something, even a phone call with it, because it's what? Katherine Heigl is Leslie Mann's sister.
They're mentioned, and I think there's like photographs of them around or something, but they're like they get the pot cookies or from Rogan's character. Ben, I think is his name. I called him Ben and got the weed cookies.
Okay, well that's good.
I didn't catch that.
Do you ever get to get a babysitter, Nick, and go eat edibles with the wifey at a hotel?
On occasion. I mean, I have gummies right here. I might eat one in a little bit. It's fine. I don't really need a babysitter for that. You know, keep it small. 5 milligram, 10 milligram. But No, but we got out for the anniversary. We went up to Sonoma and hit a bunch of wineries and had a place to ourselves for like 3 days. That was cool. I mean, the babysitter is usually grandma, so if grandma can do it, then
awesome.
We'll ride. But can't be. It's like you can't call like some stranger up to watch your kid during COVID, bro. It's crazy.
Oh
out
yeah, jeez.
Oh, so yeah. I was just thinking about that scene. I wasn't being like specifically going to go do edibles someplace, but like, is that pretty accurate the way they, you know, the Apatow
when they're like ordering like, all the
where they're just like, let's just get away to try and like reset and like clear our minds for a second. So that,
I mean, you definitely will come back from something like that and be like, all right, let's and it is funny because a lot of times when you do get back, like the kid will be like screaming, or like when they walk in and the kids are fighting, they're like, mama, like it does be like that more times than not. You're like, okay, here we are. Food burning, the kids crying, Louie, the dog like shit in the bedroom or something. You're like, fuck, should have stayed out for one more day. But yeah, no, that part was funny to me too, because that was real. Like when they're like driving,
that's making me laugh. Like the misery of others, maybe that's my whole thing.
Like when they're driving back, and then they like put their hand on each other and they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna get through a few more years," you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like charming and sweet, and then they show up and they dump a bag of trash on them. Yeah, and like,
right, exactly.
Yeah. You know what's funny? After everything, I would definitely still watch This Is 50.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
You know what I mean? Like, if they even after the bad reviews and people complaining about it, the first one made a bunch of money, I think.
Yeah, well, it made a profit for sure.
Yeah, people went and saw it, and I'm over here like, even if it was the same shit, I would watch it and I'd be like, it was the same thing. I didn't really like it, but I'd be pumped to see it.
Well, yeah, but right, 10 years later, it would be like saying goodbye or taking their... Oh, I guess like there she's what do you call it? Pregnant now, right? So they'd still have a kid in the house. I was thinking it would be like her sending the youngest one off to college and being like an
imposter. Right.
Yeah. But I think there's something to be said though about it's like no matter what, people, myself included, are down to just hang out with the Apatow gang, just doing anything, even anything, if it's nothing. Like, I'll do nothing with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the complaint of this movie. It's just some critics are just like, I'm tired of hanging out with these guys.
And then the rest of us are like, I could do it. I could keep it up. I could keep watching.
Yeah, like as far as ranking this movie, like I think the train wreck I wasn't really feeling.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be the guy who thinks that she's not funny or whatever, but I just don't think she's funny. I just didn't think that movie was that great. I think it was like capitalizing on her popularity at the time.
Oh, absolutely. But Judd Apatow like kind of does that really well. He'll find somebody and just be like, hey, you want to be the lead in a movie? Write something and I'll direct it.
Well, that's what he did with The King of Staten Island, which is the
and that's
Pete
what he
Davidson,
did with her. And
that's one of my favorite movies of the year. I think it's great.
I feel like that's what he did with Bridesmaids, too. He didn't direct it, but he was like, yo, Kristen Wiig, if you fucking write something, like, we'll make it.
Yeah.
Just write anything. And so then they do.
Yeah. So
working.
I think I'm putting This Is 40 above Trainwreck and above... Funny People, and above Knocked Up, actually. I think it's funny.
Really? You like this one more than Knocked Up?
I know Knocked Up's like a whatever.
What's number one then? What's number one, Judd Apatow?
Oh, the 40-year-old virgin is pretty untouchable.
Yeah. Where is the cable guy count or no?
did he direct or write that?
He produced it or something, I think.
Yeah.
He also wrote or produced Heavyweights, which I love.
Yes,
Heavyweights. If we're going 90s Apatow, then let's not
Freaks and Geeks. The whole
The Cable Guy is like literally one of the funniest movies ever made.
It's so underrated.
Good. I love that movie.
So dark. It's awesome.
So misunderstood.
I went and saw that with my mom for her birthday when I was like 13 or 14 years old. That shit was
what
fire.
A weird birthday.
Yeah. We were both hyped on it. We're like, let's go see Cable Guy. I was all, yeah, let's do it.
what about you, Carson?
Yeah, I'm putting it towards the bottom. I would have to rewatch Funny People to really determine, but I think Funny People is right towards the bottom. King of Staten Island for me is also kind of right towards the bottom.
See, I love that movie.
And so then I think this one is probably like third to last, which still puts it somewhere near the top. Unless
I guess he's only directed about like six or seven movies.
Yeah, he doesn't have a huge catalog, but I mean, 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up are undeniable classics.
Yeah.
40-Year-Old Virgin probably more so undeniable. But
Knocked Up's pretty great.
But then I do like Trainwreck probably more than This Is 40.
Wow. All right. What about you, Cume?
I actually haven't even seen the Staten Island one yet, so I can't I can't really rank that. But yeah, I'd say about middle ground is about where it's reaching. It might peak maybe like between 4 and 3, kind of fluctuating. Yeah. It ain't going to be better than the top two, and it's not going to be the worst. You know?
Yeah. I don't know why people hated on this so much, but, you know, they thought they were, that it was a tired shtick.
They really hated that movie.
Man, they tear it apart, man. I don't know why it was so, like, people left the theater being like, you know what? Fuck Judd Apatow.
I'm telling you, man, like, if this movie was an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minutes max, it would have been, it would have been a movie that people really liked.
You can say that about a lot of movies.
I know, but Judd Apatow seems to be a consistent culprit of you left too much movie in the movie.
Which is why I don't know why people get so upset when he does it every time. It's like, how the fuck is this movie over? You're like, he's done it 6 times in a row.
It's almost like he gets Universal to just fund his home movies. He's just like, I'm gonna put all my family and like a bunch of my friends, and we're gonna just film at my house, and we're just gonna have them like act out stuff that has either happened to us or would be funny if it did happen to us, and we're just gonna make them pay for the catering.
Yeah, I mean,
and we'll have a record of it forever.
His daughter is becoming like a star. Like,
oh yeah,
she's
dude,
like
she's working her
Instagram,
working her tush off.
Yeah.
She's doing
all right,
good.
Guys. Nick, I know you got to get back to teaching your daughter everything about life.
Yes, that's right.
So, do you want to drop some plugs on us? I know you got a new record out.
Yeah, let's see. So, Spotify, anything you stream your music on is QM, which is QM. And that has a bunch of music on there. If you go to my Bandcamp, that's QM Music, so qmusic.bandcamp.com. I got like hundreds of songs on there. I got my album 4 tracks and S20s. That's with my daughter hosting that. That's where I played all the beats live in one take onto the 4-track, and then I uploaded that. I got a new album out with Limousine 10, so look for Limousine 10 on all the streaming stuff. I got, I just produced the album for Jay Quest. So I did all the beats on that. So you can see J.Quest. I got 3 new On Till albums coming out. That'll be all next year. I got a new solo album coming out next year. It's going to be like the sequel to Happy Hour, but it's not going to be called Happy Hour 2, but it's going to be in that vein. We just shot a video. So if you're on YouTube, you can look up Limousine 10, Ride with the Limousine 10. That video just came out like a week ago. I got a new instrumental album coming out on I Had an Accident Records out of up northwest there in Spokane, Washington. What else do I got? I don't know.
That's
good. I was trying to plug it all in there.
Oh no, that's my God, please share as much as you like. That Happy Hour was my album of the year when I came out, and
thank you.
Take Me to Your Leader is like 9 years old, 11 years old. What is it now?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to convince McLean, maybe if he sees this, to like, we should just press it on vinyl or something. So it'll be 10 year anniversary in like a year or so.
Yeah, that album was my jam.
It takes like a year and a half to get vinyl pressed these days, so I might as well start.
Yeah, right. Carson, what about you? You want to drop some plugs on the people?
Yeah, dude, if you're already listening to a movie podcast, you can come check out The First Rule of Film Club. JT has been on, you know, all the episodes I've done so far. So you could just, if you like hearing him and I, and, you know, we're over there. So check that out. Also, I run like a book club for film called the Film Struck Film Club. You could find that on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. I always post like my little solo discussion / review, critique, whatever, of the movie of the week. We'll watch one movie a week. I'll typically find from like the Criterion channel. So if you have a Criterion channel subscription, this is kind of a fun way to utilize that. There's so many streaming options that sometimes it's nice having a curator, and I enjoy being that curator. So if you are curious about more classic international films, things like that, I'm your guy. So come check it out, and I'll you know, see if it's something you're into.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you for taking the time, both of you. And
oh yeah, let me plug my Insta. But hit that hit that Instagram too and Twitter at QM Rec League. QM Rec League. Follow me and whatever. Sometimes I'm funny. Sometimes I post music and stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. I'll share links with you guys too on the page. So, thanks, guys. It was good talking to you.
Good times. Yeah. Cheers.
That was fun. Bros.
Thanks for having me on.
That's our show. Thank you so much for listening. The podcast is produced by me, JT Sondergren. You can find my movie recommendations and reviews on Instagram at Quarantine Film Club and on Letterboxd at Quarantine Film C. Give both of those a follow. Original theme music for the show by Richie Cunning. Find more of his work on Spotify and Bandcamp. Just search Richie Cunning. You'll be happy you did. We'll be back next time with more mediocrity from our greatest filmmakers, but until then, remember, you're only as strong as your weakest link.